Good morning. You're listening to the Estate and Medicaid Planning Hour with the Herzog Law Firm.
And welcome and good morning. I'm Harry Miller.
And I'm Debbie Verney.
And Debbie and I are two of the partners with the Herzog Law Firm. We are here each Saturday morning to chat with you, talk to you, answer your questions, get you some good information, hopefully, and in the areas of estate planning, elder law, asset protection planning, wills, trusts, advanced directives, all those cool things.
All those cool things.
Home care, Medicare, and welcome back. Debbie took a few days off last week.
Nice little trip to Florida.
All right.
Got some sun. Didn't bring it back with me, obviously. I get back and it snows.
Were you back to see the snowstorm yesterday afternoon?
Yes, I was back for the snow. It was great.
That was a surprise. I missed that forecast. But anyway, it's mostly gone this morning. I think it's supposed to get up close to 60. But anyway, welcome. We love to chat with you this morning here at Magic 590 and 100.5 FM and our friends up in the North Country also at 518-476-5900. That's 518-476-5900. If you're outside the local calling area, you can reach Debbie or I toll free at 1-800-WROW-590. So, don't forget, you got about a week left to get your taxes done.
That's nice.
April 15th is coming up.
Mine is done.
All right.
I did that way before I went on vacation.
Well, that's very nice. That means you must be getting a refund instead of writing a check.
Well, I wrote one check and got a refund from the other.
You know what? That's what happened to me this year. Yep.
Which makes no sense.
Yeah, because the new federal tax law is not so kind to New Yorkers.
True.
With the $10,000 state and local income tax gap, if you're still working like Debbie and I are, and you have a house and you pay real estate taxes and school taxes, and Mary, you're up in Saratoga, they've got some good taxes.
Yeah, not so good for the residents, but I guess good for the area.
But fortunately, you can still deduct all of those things other than your state income taxes and your state tax return. So we didn't lose the benefit.
That's true. I did want to mention that today, I guess you had to be registered in advance, but there is a symposium at Hudson Valley for Tools for Caregivers, Resources You Can Use When a Senior Relies on You. And so a lot of people don't think about these things. There's workshops on hospital discharge, disaster preparedness, legal and financial issues. And Kim is out there right now, and then I'm going for a couple of hours, and then Dave's coming for a couple of hours. We split it up three ways. But it's interesting because the things that they're covering, are self-care, which a lot of people don't think about. It's like you're so involved in taking care of the person that needs your help that you don't take care of yourself.
Mm. And you can get what's called caregiver burnout.
Exactly.
It's critically important. There are so many people out there taking care of aging parents, spouses who have declined, who have disabilities, there's a huge increase in the incidence of dementia and Alzheimer's. Those people present additional challenges beyond just physical disabilities and caretaker. I think there's a lot of caretaker support groups and things like that. But yeah, that'll be a great. What time does it start? Like 10 or 11 or?
It's from 8:30 in the morning till 1 in the afternoon.
Oh, okay.
And it's the Telecommunications Center at Hudson Valley Community College.
Well, that's right up the hill on Route 4 there, just mm-hmm. up the hill up Stowe Avenue.
Yeah, it says our day is free, but advanced registration is required. So I don't know if they're going to be able to just walk in or not. But it did, it looks like a great session for a lot of people to go and just get information.
Super. Absolutely. And we have some seminars coming up this coming week.
We do.
In Albany, Saratoga, Troy, and over at Glen Sanders. We have April 9th. I think that's Tuesday. No.
It's Tuesday night, yep.
Tuesday's April 9th. We're going to be up in Saratoga. And this is, I think, since the winter, April or first, we have some evening seminars back on the agenda.
Hopefully we won't have snow.
No, actually, from what David told me, we have quite a few sign-ups for the seminars.
Yeah, we do.
Pretty good. So it's 6:30 on April 9th at the Courtyard by Marriott on Excelsior Drive in Saratoga. That's right off of Route 50, isn't it?
Yeah, it's right there. Right over by Old Bryan Inn.
We'll be there by the Old Bryan Inn. Not at the Old Bryan Inn. It's at the courtyard near the Old Bryan Inn.
Up the street.
Don't go there unless you're going to have dinner first or afterwards.
There you go.
And on the next day, April 10th, we're going to be over in Troy at the new courtyard by Marriott on River Street. Now, that's a brand new hotel. I think it just opened recently. And I think that's right off the Uncle Sam Bridge there. You go over the Route 7. And then before you go up the hill, there's an exit for Hutton Street. You go downtown. It's right there. You'll probably be able to see the hotel from the bridge.
I just put it in my GPS.
You can do that, too. It's 515 River Street, Troy. So just punch it in, and you'll be there. April 11th, the following day, which is Thursday, we're going to be at the Glenn Sanders Mansion over in Scotia at 10 o'clock in the morning. And then later on that day at 6:30 on the evening of the 11th, we will be in Albany again at another courtyard by Marriott out on Washington Avenue right across from the State University.
Yeah, it's all about courtyard.
So if you want to reserve a seat, because we got room for you, but it would be helpful if you call so we got the room set up for enough people.
I know the one at Washington Avenue is going to be tight. I know that we had a bunch of people sign up for that one, so.
Yeah, that's not a huge room, but it's, it'll be okay. So you call the office at 518-465-7581, and you can leave a message on the general voicemail. Just leave your name, a phone number, and how many people will be attending with you. We're going to be talking about, these are basic estate and Medicaid planning seminars. So we're going to be talking about asset protection, asset transfers, preparing for either nursing home care, those sorts of things. And the costs of long-term care just continue to spiral upward. I think virtually every nursing home I'm aware of in the Capital District is just at or just slightly above $500 a day. So there is planning options available. Please don't wait until you're in a situation where you actually have to place someone in a nursing home, because all is not lost even at that point. But planning ahead, we can just help you protect so much more of your hard-earned life savings and assets for your spouse, your family, your children, grandchildren, and things like that.
You know, a lot of people do have long-term care insurance, but they really don't know how much it'll pay a day. It's kind of interesting, the people that I meet with and they bring in their long-term care policy, and I'm looking at it and I'm like, well, you took it out 10 years ago, and you've got $300 a day 10 years ago, and you've got a 5% inflation rider. So I do some quick math and I'm like, yeah, you're still going to be a little short.
Right. I had actually family in this week, and they both, the husband and the wife, both have very good long-term care policies, for which they're paying almost $14,000 a year.
Wow.
Okay, between the two premiums. Now the husband is in hospital. He's going to be discharged. And they really don't know what the situation is. So we have to get in touch with the company, because all of these policies have an elimination period. It's usually 100 days. And so the first 100 days, if you're not on Medicare, you got to pick up the cost yourself. Medicare will pay for rehabilitation, but if you're going for custodial care, you're not going to have Medicare coverage during that first 100 days. So, and people don't understand those things. I had another call this week from a son in San Francisco. He happens to be a lawyer, but he's a corporate lawyer. He doesn't know anything. His mother is here in the Capital District, and she's been in assisted living for 3 or 4 years. She has a good long-term care policy as well. Now, however, she's back in the hospital, and she's at the point where she can't go back to assisted living because she needs too much care.
Right.
So she now has to transition from assisted living to the nursing home. And again, the family doesn't have a clue about what to do. Now, she still has benefits left in the policy. Now they have to transition, and it's a partnership policy. So once she transitions to the nursing home and uses the policy benefits, then she can apply for Medicaid, and we can help her help them at that point. And with the partnership policy, you can roll over onto the Medicaid system after you've exhausted the policy benefits, and you can keep all of your assets. Okay,
but you still have to apply for Medicaid. It just doesn't magically happen.
It's not a magical transition. Somebody still has to file a Medicaid application. it's not as complicated as a full-blown institutional with a five-year look back, because asset transfers don't really matter if you have the partnership policy, because your assets are protected. But you're going to have to give them all your income.
Right, and a lot of people don't realize that. Whenever I meet with people that have the New York State partnership policy, I'm like, okay, so for the next 3 to 5 years, you're going to end up paying, you know, $100 a day. So theoretically, $3,000 a month.
Sure.
So whenever the partnership policy ends and you go on Medicaid, they're going to take your income.
Right, and then they say, well, who's going to pay the taxes on mom's house? I said, well, you are.
Exactly.
Unless you sell the house, the kids are going to have, somebody else is going to have to pick up the taxes, because Medicaid isn't going to get, mom gets $50 a month. That's her income allowance.
Exactly. So, I mean, they could sell the house,
even with the partnership. Yeah, you can sell the house. Yeah, sure.
You know, so it's an asset. It's just you've changed it from a house to cash. Mm-hmm. But if you didn't have a long-term care policy and mom goes into the nursing home, you're going to have to probably sell the house, because you're not going to be able, they're going to take everything but $50 worth of income, and there's not going to be any money to pay the taxes or the upkeep or anything on the house.
Right.
Plus,
I mean,
an
you
asset.
Could rent it, all right? Rent, but
true.
Who wants to rent the house? You know, no, but who wants to be a landlord?
Well, and then the rent would go to pay for the care, too, the net rent.
Yeah, but you could cover the caring charges, basically, I suppose. You know, we've done that in situations where a family member needs a place to live, so they'll rent the place for the taxes and the insurance and stuff. But most people don't, unless it's a rental property to begin with, most people don't want to get involved in that kind of a situation. So
it's true, but all is not lost. Usually, whenever someone comes in and meets with us, we have some glimmer of good news. There's something that we
there
can
is.
Do to help them.
There is. This is the thing people constantly mistake about, that particularly many people come to us who already have a family member who's already been admitted to a nursing home. They've been there maybe 3 months or 6 months or sometimes maybe a year or two, and they have just been quietly, privately paying the nursing home bill, using up the, you know, mom and dad's assets, on the theory that once they go to the nursing home, there's absolutely nothing they can do to protect anything. So what do you think about that, Deb?
That they can't protect anything?
Right. But a lot of people are under the impression that once the person is in the nursing home, they're just kind of stuck and they just have to spend down.
Nope. Usually we can save about half.
Mm-hmm.
So depending on what they've got for assets, you know, it's interesting when people call up and they call us and they say, well, mom's been in the nursing home for a year now. She spent all of her money down, so we're ready to go on Medicaid now.
I had a woman in my office 2 weeks ago who was in the same position. Her mother is in a nursing, I think, out in the Utica area.
Mm-hmm.
She lives here, and she heard about us from a friend of hers. And the same situation. They've just been paying the bill, and now mom's down to about $60,000. And I said, how long has she been in the nursing home? She said, but she's been there about 11 or 12 months.
Wow.
And it's just, she said, well, we just figured there was nothing. I said, who told you that? Well, I said, you know, that's why when you're in these situations, you need professional advice.
Exactly. We had a walk-in in Saratoga, I guess, last week when I was gone, that had gone to another law firm, and they said, there's nothing we can do for you. We can't help you. And Jay Marie kind of squeezed him in between her appointments, and she said, oh, no, we can take care of this. This is not a problem. So, you know, it just because someone tells you that they can't help you doesn't mean that you're helpless.
That you're helpless. That's a good phrase. I like that.
You like that?
Phrase, yeah. Well, here's part of the problem. Lawyers, not all lawyers understand and are experienced in the Medicaid system. There are many fine lawyers who draft wills and trusts and powers of attorney and other estate planning documents, but they don't concentrate in the nursing home care, which is typically what the classic elder lawyer will do. We don't just prepare legal documents.
Right.
We help people go through housing choices and things when they're getting older. They're looking at senior housing. Some of them are apartments. Some of them are facilities which involve an entrance fee and monthly charges. And the vast majority of people know nothing about these programs or the facilities that are available. And so they come in and we talk about it. And it's very helpful to people for the most part.
It makes sense. It totally makes sense to be educated. That's what you try to do. You go online and you try to educate yourself about everything. And there's a lot of good information out there, but there's some that's not so good. I met a lady yesterday that they had gone to an attorney. They did the trust, the wills, the healthcare proxies, power of attorneys, had all of her documents in order. And then I said, has anyone talked to you about community Medicaid? And she's like, well, yeah, they kind of brushed over it, but I really, you know, and because her dad is, she can't care for him at home anymore. She said he wants to live in his own house. I work. I can't be over there all the time. Different people in the family are taking different shifts. And so they're looking at assisted living. But we'd really like to keep him home. And I said, well, that's what you can do with community Medicaid. You would be able to keep him home. Mm-hmm. And we kind of just had a few minutes to talk about it. And then she said, well, you know, I'm going to look at an assisted living because he needs enhanced assisted living. So it sounds to me like he's going to end up going into probably chronic care sooner or later, but he could stay home depending on what his situation is.
And that's the tough call, because here's what the family sort of, I had a family, Kim Hance works in the law firm. Kim is not a lawyer, and you've probably, if you've listened to the radio show regularly, she's on here, you know, probably at least once a month or so.
Yep, once a month.
And Kim is a certified care manager. So she's not a lawyer. She's a person who can cobble together a plan of home care or help you with assisted living and picking different programs. And also, what she's really good at is figuring out, because there's more than one program, and she can help the family figure out which program you're going to get the most hours from to help you out. And then we do the application part of it, the legal stuff and the financial stuff. But, you know, we're lawyers. I can't go out to a client's house and make do an evaluation and say, oh, well, you need 5 hours. It looks like you need 5 to 7 hours a day. I'm not qualified to make that evaluation, but Kim is. And so she can cut through a lot of the red tape and the rigmarole and give you an idea up front what you might expect down the road, because unfortunately the home care system, you have to go through the whole application process and be approved financially before you have any idea whether you're going to get 2 hours a day or 10 hours a day.
Right.
And at the end of the day, if all you're going to get is 2 or 3 hours, if that's all you're going to qualify for, you may conclude early on that you need to go to the next step, and because that's not going to be enough care.
Right.
And we can help you do that before you pay us money to go through the application process and waste your time and down the road find out the care you're going to get isn't adequate for your family member. So, I mean, that's what a really full service elder law firm can provide to their clientele.
Right. We have, Kim and I actually have a client in Saratoga that was referred to us, and the wife has Alzheimer's, mm-hmm. and the husband still has all of his faculties, but he's in a wheelchair. And so he was kind of depending on his wife with Alzheimer's to kind of take care of him, you know? So, right. And the things, she got progressively worse. He ended up in the hospital, and, you know, everyone was like, oh, well, we just need to place her in assisted living. We need to do this. We need to do that. And when Kim stepped in, she figured out, got them on community Medicaid. We have care coming into the house. He's a veteran. So she
so
hooked him up with a veteran.
Qualify for aid and attendance.
Right. So she hooked him up with the Veterans Association. They put a ramp on their house. The Veterans Association put a ramp on the house so that he could get in and out on his wheelchair. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's just, it's been great for them. I mean, it's one of those things where Kim really stepped up to the plate, and she was able to coordinate all of the services, and they both got to stay home.
And that's what everybody wants. You know, people don't want to go to assisted living. They don't want to go to nursing homes. They want to stay in their house as long as they possibly can. And so that's our goal, too, for you.
Definitely.
To keep your parent home, keep your husband or wife home, where you can be with them, where they can be in a home environment. And the other thing, if you move that woman to assisted living, there's no Medicaid coverage to cover assisted living. Okay? There's not the Medicaid program is eligible for home care and nursing home care, which they call a skilled nursing facility. Assisted living is kind of in between. It's not home care. It's also not a skilled nursing facility. And so the Medicaid program doesn't cover care in an assisted living with very limited exceptions. For the most part, they're all private pay. And a dementia bed in one of those facilities can easily run, you know, $6,000 to $9,000 a month.
At least.
And frankly, a lot of people just don't have the kind of income to pay it privately for very long.
It'd be nice if we had one caller.
Sure would. 518-476-5900. I think everybody's out building snowmen this morning, huh?
Could be.
518-476-5900 is our number here, and Ben will gladly take your call. Toll-free number is 1-800-WROW-590. Well, guess who turned 97 this week?
Who?
Everybody's sweetheart, Doris Day.
Oh, wow.
Remember Doris Day?
I do, yes.
I mean, she's 93 years old. She's a big pet person, I think. You know, she's a dog person, like Betty mm-hmm. White. She's an animal person. And then she was a singer. She started in the 1930s, made all those movies and, you know, with Rock Hudson and Pillow Talk. And
yeah, I was going to say Rock Hudson. That's, I remember that, yeah.
Yeah, he was, you know, she did Pillow Talk. Rock Hudson, A Touch of Mink with Cary Grant.
Ooh.
Wow, in 1968. And, or no, 1962. And with six, you get Egg Roll. Remember that one?
I do.
All right, we're going to talk to Barbara out in Grafton.
Good morning, Barbara.
Good morning.
What can we help you with?
My mother-in-law is 97. We've gone through the process of getting her onto Medicaid. And then as soon as we did that, she ended up going into a nursing home. Now this, she's just become permanent in the nursing home, and we have her home, which is in the name of the three children and with her the right to live in it. And we had a leak in the second floor, and the house is basically destroyed. So we've got an insurance policy paying us for the repairs of the house. But we're going to flip the house because we don't have enough money to put back into the house. Now, she has only about $4,000 left in cash, and the policies of, well, what she's, because it's $15,000, what, $480 that they can keep now?
$15,450.
$450. Right. Mm-hmm. Okay. With the sale of this house and the insurance money that we might have left over, she'll go over that amount. Can she give some of her money that she has currently in her possession to family members in order to reduce her money? Or how should we go about it so we don't have to give maybe $3,000 or $4,000 to the government?
How long ago did they deed the house to the three of you?
Oh, it's been years. It's 2000.
More than 5 years, yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Well, the money from the sale of the house, because she has a life estate, we'd have to look at the deed. It depends whether she has what's called a life estate or whether she has what's called a life use.
Okay? It's life use.
If it's a life use, which means it terminates when she permanently goes somewhere else, like to the nursing home, then on the sale of the house, she would get nothing. And the money would be divided. The three children would split the money, not your mother.
Life use. So if it's but really life use,
you have to read the deed. You have to have a lawyer. You know, if you want to, you know, we can read the deed.
Yeah, the lawyer's looked at it, but and he's saying that she's getting a part of it. So
well, then she has a life estate, not a life use.
Okay.
Yeah, it depends on the language, because if it's a life estate, then she gets cash. If it's a life use, then it terminates whenever she goes into a nursing
make that system. Make sure that they understand the difference, because not everybody understands the difference between a life use. It's very important in the Medicaid context. So if the deed says that she has the legal right to live there, but if she permanently moves somewhere else, her life use ends, then she has a life use, not a life use. It's a legal interpretation. All right? The insurance money should be, I mean, the children should, probably the check would be payable to all four of you.
No, because she had the insurance policy. So actually the check is being paid to her, but it's being sent in care of my husband, who's the power of attorney.
Yeah, that's a harder issue. That I would have to have some research done on before I could give you a definitive answer. What should have happened is when the house was deeded to the children, all four of you should have been named as insureds as your respective interest, AIMA, as interest may appear. And then again, your mother's share would probably, are you putting the money back into the house?
No.
Are you not? Okay.
Yeah. It looks like we're going to end up with maybe $5,000 or $6,000 mm-hmm. above what the expenses are to do the remediation.
Right.
Does mom have a prepaid funeral?
No.
There you go. Use the $5,000 to do a prepaid funeral. She can have a prepaid funeral and still be on Medicaid. It just has to be an irrevocable burial trust.
Yeah. Irrevocable.
Yeah, so if you go to the funeral home, they'll know what you're talking about. You just tell them that mom's in a nursing home on Medicaid, and they'll know exactly what to do.
Yeah, that you set up directly with the funeral home, not with the lawyer.
Okay.
But I would, the insurance thing, if you want to counsel, you should come in and talk to us probably. That could be a little more complicated, and I don't want to give you, it's too complicated to give you advice over the phone on that one. But you can always call the office at 465-7581 and come in for an appointment and talk to one of us about that issue. And I'm sure we can get you an answer.
Thank you very much.
Sure.
You're welcome. Have a great weekend.
Yeah, that's, who do I got now? Oh, Russell, down in Kingston. Hello, Russell.
Good morning, sir. How you doing today?
I'm okay.
I dialed in late. I'm not sure who's on your panel. Usually there's two of you, so is it Debbie there?
It's me, Debbie Verney, and me. I'm Harry Miller.
All right. Good morning, Debbie, to you as well.
Good morning.
I have two questions for you folks, if you don't mind.
Go ahead.
First question pertains to an issue involving the estate of my parents. And after their passing, I received a form, and the title of it was Notice of Intent to File a Claim Against the Estate.
Right, you got it, yeah. One of them on Medicaid?
Yes, sir.
Yeah, you got that from some company in Texas that the state Social Services Department hires, yes.
Correct,
I know exactly what you got, yes.
My question, sir, is there a time limit on that form? In other words, this form I filled out, it's been the better part of a year and a half now. I've received no word from them. I assume that this matter's been settled?
Yeah, here's what happens. The state of New York, for someone who has been on Medicaid in a nursing home, when the person dies, the state can recover reimbursement for what they paid out for Medicaid from the probatable assets of the person who died. All right? In all likelihood, your parents didn't have any probate assets. Presumably, all they would have had was a checking account somewhere. And if it was in joint names with somebody like you, that would pass on death to the other joint account owner, and the state couldn't claim that money.
Okay.
So you never probated a will for them in Ulster County, and so their claim as a creditor could only be asserted against any assets that passed through the surrogates court in Ulster County. So you fill out the form, you send it back. Some people don't even fill it out because there really is no legal representative. You're just her son. You're not the executor.
Right.
So,
yeah, they had asked for, I believe it was copies of any paperwork.
Mm-hmm.
And really, the only asset they had was a joint checking account, which...
Right.
All right, well, that answers that question.
So in all likelihood, you won't hear anything further from them.
Well, that's great
news. And if you do, you should call us, all right?
All right. Second question is, I'd just like to get your opinion on this. New York's position when it comes to video depositions. In other words, can you substitute that for, say, a will?
No.
I'm curious.
No.
Well,
there are no...
to the point.
New York does not... We do not have electronic wills in New York. I was actually looking at that. There's only two states in the country that currently allow electronic wills, and they are, as you might guess, Nevada. And the other one, curious enough, is Indiana. We don't have now. There was about 20 years ago. I remember there was in vogue in a lot of estate planning firms where they would videotape the will execution ceremony. All right, to prove that Grandpa was happy and joy and you know he wasn't incompetent in case there was a will contest. But then everybody, we never did it. I never. I mean, a videotape of anyone if you haven't. you gotta have a psychiatrist or a psychologist or a neurologist look at it. And I'm pretty sure they could come up with some reason what to question grandpa or grandma's mental capacity to make a will. So okay. It was always a bad idea. But now, there are things that have been admitted to probate as a will that aren't strictly speaking wills. You know, the classic example was this guy out in the Midwest. Remember the guy in the Midwest who he fell off his tractor and he got crushed under the tractor. But before he died, he scratched on the side of the tractor with a rock everything to my wife and scribbled his initials on it. And his wife brought in the tractor to the court and the court accepted it as his last will and testament. Actually really happened.
Yep.
Okay.
Wow.
So there are exceptions to that, but no, wills have to be signed. There's a very specific process when a will is executed in order for it to be legally valid and therefore probatable.
Well, that was an interesting story, and I appreciate you taking the time to answer that question, sir.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
All right. Thank you very much. Have a good weekend.
You too.
Thanks for listening.
And we'll be right back with the second half of the Herzog Law Firm's Estate and Medicaid Planning Hour right after this.
You've been listening to the Estate and Medicaid Planning Hour with the Herzog Law Firm. Join us every week to learn more about protecting the assets you've worked hard for, options available for Medicaid planning, and more. With offices located in Corporate Woods in Albany, West Harrison Street in Saratoga Springs, and Flatbush Road in Kingston, our attorneys are here to help you. If you'd like to schedule an appointment to speak with David, Jane Marie, Harry, or Debbie, please call us during normal business hours, Monday through Friday, 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. To contact us at our Albany office, call 518-465-7581. Our Saratoga Springs office at 518-581-8131. Or our Kingston office at 845-338-6405. Let the Herzog Law Firm help you navigate a plan that works for you and your family. Now back to the Estate and Medicaid Planning Hour with the Herzog Law Firm.
And we're back for the second half hour of the Herzog Law Firm's Estate Medicaid Planning Hour. I'm Debbie Verney.
And I'm Harry Miller.
And Harry just handed me the list of seminars for next week.
Well, we got to, in the second half hour, we got to remind people we got seminars coming up next week.
We do. We have seminars.
So they need to sign up and come and see us and meet us.
So we have one April 9th at 6:30 in the evening. That's at the Courtyard by Marriott at 11 Excelsior Drive in Saratoga Springs. One at 10, April 10th at 2 in the afternoon at the Courtyard by Marriott on the waterfront in River Street in Troy. That'll be a new venue.
That's a new hotel. Yes, that's a new hotel. It's a new courtyard in Troy, right on River Street, up by the Uncle Sam. Is they still call it the Uncle Sam Bridge? I think so. Yeah. Not the Green Island Bridge. It's a big one over Route 7. Yeah.
And then April 11th at 10 in the morning at Glenn Sanders Mansion, 1 Glen Avenue in Scotia. And April 11th at 6:30 in the evening. So we have two evening seminars. That's rare. At the Courtyard by Marriott on Washington Ave in Albany, 1455 Washington Ave, over across from SUNY, right?
Right across, yeah. There's a whole bunch of hotels up there. There's a gazillion hotels there, right there off of I-90. But this is the Courtyard. Because Dunkin' Donuts right next door, something like that.
But we do have cookies and coffee.
You don't have to stop at Dunkin'. We will have. Is that an evening seminar?
It's an evening seminar.
I don't know what we'll have. Coffee, so I don't know what we have. Some cookies or something like
cookies,
that.
Cookies, soda, decaf coffee.
Yes, well, for an evening seminar, I hope.
Yeah.
Definitely.
You don't want people awake all night, you know?
Definitely not. Definitely not. So, let's get some calls here in the second half hour at 518-476-5900. That's 518-476-5900. If you are outside the local calling area, you can reach us toll free at 1-800-WROW-590.
And I did want to mention that if you are interested in listening to one of the radio shows afterwards, or you miss us and you just can't live without hearing us on Saturday, they're actually on the website for the Kingston radio station.
It's a podcast.
Yeah, it's a podcast. And I was going to get that information in just a second. But you can do that. You can go on there and listen to it. If somebody says, wow, did you hear what Harry and Debbie said? you could be like,
it was so brilliant.
We're
so listen to it
exactly.
Twice.
They have to listen to it again and say, wow, that's pretty cool. So that's the WBPM 92.9 FM is where the podcast is. You can go on their website and the podcast is right there. Hopefully we're going to get the podcast linked to our seminars to our website.
Our website, yeah.
Yeah,
so
we're working on it.
We should be able to get that done.
We're getting more and more tech savvy.
Definitely. And don't forget taxes. If you haven't done, I bet I had a half a dozen calls this week from either clients or clients' accountants or tax preparers about filling out the fiduciary tax return for their Medicaid Asset Protection Trust. So if your accountant or your tax preparer isn't sure about it, for heaven's sakes, call the office. We can send you or we can send them our little instruction packet and the forms. Not all accountants do what are called fiduciary tax. They do income tax returns, corporate partnerships, and things. Some of them are not all that familiar with the fiduciary tax return. And we want you to get it right because we don't want you to overpay your taxes. We've had some situations where the accountant has actually treated the trust as a taxpayer instead of a grantor trust, which is a pass-through. So the income that's earned by your trust on your dividends and income gets passed through on your 1040, which is a good thing because you are in a lower tax bracket than your trust would be for that same taxable income in all likelihood. So,
yeah, I got quite a few emails. I'm addicted to my phone, unfortunately. So I got quite a few emails.
That's becoming a real serious problem for people.
I know. While I was on vacation, sitting by the pool answering my emails, and I got quite a few while I was away about taxes and what needs to be done.
Yeah. Hey, all right. Next, we're going to talk to Mary up in Clifton Park. Good morning, Mary.
Morning, Mary.
Good morning. I still am not clear regarding IRAs and annuities, whether they can go into a trust.
Okay. IRAs first, because that's easier.
That's an easy question.
The answer unilaterally, absolutely, every time is no. You cannot put an IRA into a trust. Okay.
Not even a Roth.
Not even a Roth. Okay. You could make the trust a beneficiary, but it's usually not advisable to do that because when you make a trust the beneficiary of an IRA, there are very complicated tax rules to make sure that you can pass it through at your age and life expectancy level. So the only way you could put an IRA in a trust would be to liquidate it, cash it in, pay all the income tax on it, and then put the net amount, which would be foolish. We would rarely, if ever, advise you to do that, okay?
Okay, thank you.
Okay, annuities are a more peculiar animal, and frankly, the answer to the question depends on a couple of things. First, we have to determine whether it is a qualified or a non-qualified annuity, all right? So what does that mean, okay? A qualified annuity is like a retirement account, okay? And you have a pile of money that you've earned through employment or self-employment or whatever, and you happen to have it invested in an annuity, some type of annuity product. Well, that's just like an IRA. When you hit 70 and a half, you're going to have to take distributions from it. They're called RMDs, required minimum distributions, at 70 and a half. And so that's the same thing. You can't put that in a trust. A non-qualified annuity, on the other hand, is an insurance product that you purchased from an insurance company. You gave them $50,000, and they sold you an annuity, all right? Now, technically, that annuity could go into, there are three individual components of an annuity. There is there's the annuitant, the person who is the measuring life for purposes of calculating the annuity distributions. Then there is the owner of the annuity, the person who bought it. And thirdly, there is what's called the beneficiary. And that's the person who gets what's left in the annuity when the owner dies or the annuitant dies. Okay. So you could actually, in our grantor trust, you could put a non-qualified annuity and change the owner to the trust, I believe, without triggering adverse income tax consequences to the annuity.
Mm-hmm.
When I say adverse income tax consequences, I mean the following. If you bought a $50,000 annuity 20 years ago, and now it's worth $75,000, okay, the buildup or appreciation in the annuity, when you draw it out, is taxed as ordinary income, all right? And it will be allocated. Years ago, in what we called pre-TEFRA annuities, TEFRA was probably giving you more information than you want. The Tax Equity and Fiscal Responsibility Act of 1986, which is when Ronald Reagan was president. Prior, if you have a pre-86 annuity, you know what you could do back then? You could take the $50,000 of your initial capital out and leave the $25,000 of taxable income inside the annuity and get your money back tax-free. Since 86, you can't do that anymore.
Yeah, they kind of closed that up
right.
A little bit.
So if you have a $75,000 annuity and your original investment was $50,000, assuming it wasn't part of a previous 1035 exchange, basically, one-third of every dollar, 33 cents of every dollar is going to be taxable, and the other 67 cents is going to be return of your initial investment. So, yeah, I think you could put that non-qualified, you could change the owner to the trust. The only problem with doing that is you can't change the annuitant once you buy the annuity product. You can't change the annuitant, I don't believe. So if the annuitant, the person who's the measuring life, can still draw out the annuity on a monthly basis, based on life expectancy, I think if that person wound up in a nursing home on Medicaid, they would probably have to annuitize the non-qualified annuity, even assuming it wasn't liquidated.
Right? Okay. So,
but any event, if you have those things, you ought to come in and chat with us, all right?
If you were to put it in a non-qualified, then the annuity that could go into the non-qualified
right.
and go into a trust. Would that be a five-year look-back also?
Oh, yes. Yes, if you change the ownership from yourself to your trust, it would have to be in there for 5 years. What you could do, if after 5 years you wind up in the nursing home, instead of annuitizing the product and giving the money to the nursing home, you could liquidate, you could cash in the annuity. The money would go into the trust, and you'd have to pay income tax potentially on it, but it might be less. The tax might be less than spending the money on the nursing home.
Right.
So there are ways to shelter annuity products, but they're not as they used to be. 15 years ago, annuity products were used a lot in order to shelter assets from nursing home exposure and nursing homes. And they do balloon, but you can't do any of that stuff anymore since 2006. They got rid of all those balloon annuities and things like that. So it's not so easy with annuity products. But I hope I didn't completely bore you answering your question.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Have a great weekend.
The other problem with annuities is if you have an annuity, and you want it disregarded, you have to annuitize it. And unless you have a spouse or a disabled child, you have to name the social services department as the beneficiary.
Right.
And so when you die, you can keep it while you're alive or annuitize it, but whatever's left when you die, if you're on Medicaid, goes back to the county.
Right.
So it's not such a great product anymore for Medicaid planning.
Well, and you need to make sure that you do everything correctly, too. We had a client who had an annuity that made he retitled the annuity in the name of the trust. So he was supposed to make the trust the owner and the beneficiary, but he only made it the owner, not the beneficiary.
Oh.
And then what happened was he passed away. It was a large annuity. He left his wife as the beneficiary, and now the wife is in the nursing home. So the question would be, you know, what are you going to do? They said that she has to take it over the next 5 years. So, and it's non-qualified. And so she has...
Right, probably, because she's a survivor, yeah.
Right. And so the question would be, do you cash it in now and try to save half, right, with the nursing home? Or do you just kind of just start taking the distributions and let them go to the nursing home? You know, so it's like you got to try to do all the figures.
It's tough. It's tough because annuities, the buildup in annuities is taxed as ordinary income,
mm-hmm.
whereas the appreciation in stocks and bonds and mutual funds is taxed at long-term capital gains rates, which are dramatically lower. Steve in Red Hook is on the line. Hey, Steve. Good morning.
Yes. Good morning. Just to follow up on this annuity question, if you have an annuity that's worth like $175,000 and it's a Roth annuity, IRA, whatever. Mm-hmm. Can you protect that from the nursing home? What would you have to do? Cash it in and put it into a...
If it's a Roth, if it's a Roth IRA, it's still an IRA. It's a Roth IRA that happens to be invested in an annuity, okay? But it's predominantly it's an IRA account. And under the social services rules, if you go into a nursing home, and you know, with the Roth, unlike a regular IRA, you don't have to take distributions starting at 70 and a half. You're not required to. But you're allowed to. You can take distributions. So if you're in a nursing home and you want to apply for Medicaid and you're not taking your Roth IRA, they're going to count the whole $175,000 as an asset, okay? Whereas if you start annuitizing it over your life expectancy, you convert it from an asset to an income stream. So if you have to take out $1,000 a month based on your age and actuarial life expectancy, yeah, you might have to give the nursing home $1,000 a month. But if you have a 10-year life expectancy, it's highly unlikely you're going to be in the nursing home for 10 years. So there'll still be something left in the Roth at the end of the day. The alternative to annuitizing it would be basically to just cash in the Roth IRA, because unlike a regular IRA, it's after-tax dollars. Right. So you could cash in your $175,000, and we could basically do a rule of half spend down and save about half of it. So we could fix the liability. Whereas if you live long enough and you annuitize it more than 50%, that was a bad choice. But unfortunately, we can't predict when people are going to die or go to nursing homes, and so we have to guess sometimes.
Okay, so there's no way of salvaging the whole amount. You'd have to...
No.
The best would be 50% of that.
Yes, that would be... and again, we would look at the person's health, I think, at the time. I mean, all of these things are guesses because we're guessing about life and death, which fortunately we're not in a position to make decisions about yet. But, you know, if the person was severely ill and the doctor really believed, for instance, that they were not going to live more than 6 or 9 months, we would probably just annuitize it and pay it out of that period of time, assuming that the person would perhaps pass away in the nursing home. Mm-hmm. Whereas if this was a very healthy 78-year-old woman who had advanced senile dementia and was strong as an ox but likely to live 10 years in a nursing home because of her memory issues, we might want to cash it in, fix the liability, and move from there. So those are the kinds of decisions we talk about when you come in and look at your estate plan.
What if you cashed it in and took the cash and put it in a safety deposit box?
Well, if you did it more than 5 years before you apply for Medicaid, it wouldn't matter.
Well, it would be fraud.
If you did it within 5 years, well, if you cashed it, you know, you'd have to disclose the fact that you had the money. Yeah.
Right, so it's still available to pay for your care, even though
absolutely.
It's a safety deposit box.
Yes. Yeah.
That'd be the best way to go.
That's it. You know, you'd be in jail, and you get five hots in a cot, or three hots in a cot.
Three hots in a cot.
So you don't have to worry about health care.
An 80-year-old man in jail, right?
There you go, exactly.
The transfer, the cashing in, if you did it within 5 years, obviously they're going to see an investment statement showing that the annuity was liquidated. And the next question the social services caseworker will ask is, what did you do with the money?
Atlantic City.
Yeah, well, okay, so you have to produce...
Use your frequent gambler's card so that you can get the readout from the casino that shows that you lost the money.
I had a client who tried that once. They tried $30,000 at the track, and they had all these losing tickets from Saratoga.
They went
Saratoga.
Through the trash, right?
Yeah, and they all had footprints on the bottom of them. So people walked all over them, and they threw them on the ground.
That's funny.
It doesn't work that way. No, you have to disclose your assets. So if you have the $175,000 in a safe deposit box, and you don't disclose it to the county when you apply, you have probably committed Medicaid fraud.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thanks, Steve. Great weekend.
Yeah, you know.
Everybody's trying to look for a way to save, and why not, you know? But we have to keep you on the up and up.
Yes. We don't want you to lie on your application.
No, we don't. You cannot lie on these applications. I mean, it's like this. Did you see this? I mean, this college, getting your kid in college scandal. You see what the latest one is? The Harvard University fencing coach was fired this week. You know what it was a Chinese billionaire who got his son admitted to Harvard on the fencing team.
Okay.
So, you know what his scam was? He bought the coach's house for $1 million, which is $400,000 over what it was listed for. It was listed for $600,000. It was for sale. He paid the guy $1 million for the house. He never moved into it. And about a year later, he sold it at a substantial loss. They just found this out, okay? The other guy at University of Southern California, the tax man's gone after him. Those people, you know, Lori Loughlin. Because what they did, they made fraudulent charitable contributions to a bogus charity that this guy set up out at USC. And guess what? They took income tax deductions for those charitable contributions.
Oh, jeez.
For a charity that wasn't, in fact, tax exempt. And now they're going to go back and re-audit them and charge them unpaid taxes, interest, and penalties. They're going to have, you know, some of these people have $500,000, you know. And also the coach who got all the money probably didn't report it as income.
Probably not. You know, Big Brother is watching.
You know, if it seems too good to be true, it probably is.
It is. It definitely is. So, again, we've got seminars coming up this week. Tuesday, April 9th at 6:30 in the evening, Courtyard by Marriott on Excelsior Drive in Saratoga. Wednesday, April 10th at 2 in the afternoon at the Courtyard by Marriott Waterfront in Troy, 515 River Street in Troy. Thursday, April 11th at 10 in the morning at Glen Sanders, 1 Glen Avenue in Scotia. And Thursday, April 11th at 6:30 in the evening at the Courtyard by Marriott on Washington Ave in Albany. You can call our office at 518.
Remember the number?
Yeah.
She's been away a whole week. She forgot the office number.
518. I almost gave my cell phone number. Anyway, 518-465-7581. And you can speak to either Stacy or Raquel, and they can put you on the list. Or you can click on the website, www.herzoglaw.com, and you can go and click on the spot on the seminars, and you can register online.
Very good.
So you got a couple of options.
You know, there's a very important case that was decided last week, and it deals with, it's been kicking around for 8 years. This case was started in 2011 in federal court in Connecticut, and it deals with something we talk about here once in a while, the distinction between being admitted to a hospital and being on observation status.
Right.
Okay? And this person brought a lawsuit. She was put on observation status rather than being admitted to the hospital. She was there more than 2 midnights, which is the rule. The rule is if you're there 2 midnights, you're supposed to be admitted. But in fact, they don't do that in every instance.
Right.
So she sued because from the hospital, she was discharged to a nursing home for rehabilitation, but it wasn't paid by Medicare. Because if you're admitted to the hospital, you're actually admitted by a physician, your hospitalization is covered under Part A of your Medicare coverage. If you're not admitted to the hospital, but you're on observation status, your hospitalization is covered under Part B, not Part A. But unlike Part A, Part B doesn't provide any rehabilitation. They don't get 100 days for rehabilitation under Part D, B. So you're stuck. So they're suing. This case has been kicked for 8 years. All the plaintiffs are dead, the people that were part of this class action. They have all died.
Aww.
But the case is now going to go to trial against the Center for Medicare and Medicaid Services, and we'll see what happens. Because they said these people should have been admitted. There's going to be a trial about that. They have a property interest in the case. And the physician really has Medicare is directing this, not so much the physicians. The argument was the physicians had the discretion to admit them or not admit it, the judge said no. Medicaid is saying, look, these people were here, but they're not going to be here two midnights or whatever. Because it may change, it may make more availability. A lot of people are in this situation where they are, and here's why it is. Most people, older people particularly, get to a hospital through the emergency room.
Right.
They have a fall. They have a stroke. They go to the emergency room, and you lay there for, 10 hours.
At least.
You're not admitted. You're just there, all right? And they are observing you. Now they put you up in a room overnight, okay?
Observing you.
Now you're either going to go home. Maybe you're going to go home, or you're going to stay and have a medical procedure or something. At the second midnight, somebody's supposed to admit you to the hospital, but they don't. You're there 5 days on observation status. Now you have to go for rehab because you had a stroke. You need speech therapy, occupational therapy. And guess what? You're not covered for rehab because you were never admitted. You got to be aware of this, folks. When you have a family member in the hospital, you've got to find out from their medical chart, from the nurse's station, whether they have actually been admitted to the hospital or not. Because if they're going to a nursing home for rehab, it's going to cost you. You really have to advocate for your parents and your spouses and your family members. Really critically important. Medical care is driven a lot these days by economics as opposed to treatment. And we have to be aware of these things and help each other.
Quick question. So now do they have to probate each of their estates so they still have standing to continue the case?
Once the active plaintiff in a class action dies, yeah, you would have to substitute the executor.
Wow. Yeah. And listen up next week.
All right.
Have a great weekend.
Take care.
Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to the Estate and Medicaid Planning Hour with the Herzog Law Firm. For more information on their services, please visit herzoglaw.com. If you'd like to speak with one of their attorneys, please contact the Albany office at 518-465-7581, the Saratoga office at 518-581-8131, or their Kingston office at 845-338-6405.